Yo, what's going on, listeners? Welcome to the latest episode of Can I Kick It, the number one podcast for all things Black history. This is your host, as always, Elliot Barr, and is joining me is a lovely young lady that has probably created the dopest t-shirt this side of Marco Polo. It's Megan Reyes. How are you doing, ma'am?
I'm doing wonderful. Thank you for having me. What a nice intro.
You know, hey, look, gotta make the guests smile, gotta make them feel happy, upbeat. You know, I can't just bring you on to have like a gloom and doom intro. That kills the vibe of the podcast.
Yeah, we gotta start off smiling and laughing.
Yeah, you know, it works. So, Megan, real quick, I want to ask you this question. Like I tend to ask most of my guests is, how did you fall in love with soccer? Or how are you starting to fall in love with soccer? Because you just said, like, before we started recording that you were totally new to it. So what caught your attention?
So I first was attracted to the game when I was 21 and I interned for the Portland Timbers. So I interned there. I really wanted professional sports experience. It worked out very well because I have family in Portland. And so it was an awesome summer internship. I was very excited, but I went in like knowing absolutely nothing about the sport, left knowing still pretty close to nothing about the sport, but I was so intrigued. I'm like, it's so beautiful. And to have that experience with a team like the Timbers, where there's so much culture and passion, the game days are, you know, like none other, especially in MLS. And I know that's changed a lot since then in the last like 10 years or so, but it was just such a beautiful experience. So that's what caught my eye. And then in the last, like, I'll be quite honest, actually, since the 2019 Cup is when I really was like, I want to start paying more attention. I want to start learning more. So it started, yeah, about 10 years ago, but I really actually tried to become more of a student recently.
Okay. So you're still fairly new to the game. I want to ask you about your time in Portland. What made you want to work for the Portland Timbers, having no idea how it was? But like, Portland is also talked about as one of these atmospheres where it's like a must-see place in American sports. How was it your experience there? And what were you doing there?
Yeah, so I will be very honest with you. When I got that internship, it was the summer before my senior year of college. So I really wanted a sports internship. I applied to a bunch of places close to me. I grew up in the Northwest. So I applied to the Timbers. I was semi-unfamiliar with who they were because it was only their second MLS season. And I got the interview and I really loved the people I was talking to, and they offered me the internship. And you know, I'll be very frank that it was just at the time, I'm like, cool, I got a sports internship, it's with a professional team, like I don't know anything about soccer, but I'm gonna go into this very open-minded. So it wasn't even that I was so much seeking them out or seeking out experience in soccer. I just, at 21, I knew I wanted to work in sports, and I wanted an internship. But my experience was awesome. Like a lot of people ask like when I fell in love, and it was that first game day when I got to the stadium and saw, you know, all the TIFOs, all the fans, everything, the chants. And I was like, holy cow, like I love this. So it was a really cool experience. I was only there for a few months. And again, you know, it was their second MLS season. There's still so much passion there, but there was very heightened passion around everything. It was so awesome. I definitely look back on it, even though it's been almost 10 years now, as probably one of my favorite moments in my career.
How dope was it to see Timber Joey, right?
Is that the name? Yeah, Timber Joey.
So when you first saw that, a man up there like cutting a tree during a live soccer game, like what was your first reaction?
I was like, what? What the hell is going on?
I mute myself like, at the right time because I laughed like super loud.
No, I was like, and then they had to explain to me like, oh, he saws off like a slab after every goal and at the end, every time we win a match. And I was like, okay. Sure.
Were you ready to call like security and be like, hey, is this a crazy guy here?
Yeah, it was definitely weird, but I get it. You know, Portland's weird, so it's fine.
That's the one thing I've heard from a lot of people from Portland is like, it's weird.
So it was very on brand, but yeah, the first time I was like, what is going on here?
I got you. Well, not the real reason, it's a bunch of reasons why we bought you, but one of the reasons why we bought you is because in the realm of soccer Twitter, you are known for creating a very unique and dope shirt. The make sure I say all the guys, right? More disabled, more women, more Black, Latina, Indigenous, Asian, LGBTQ voices in sports shirt. Which, by the way, I promise you, I'm going to buy one. I just haven't had a chance yet, but I'm going to buy one.
You're good.
But what was your reasoning behind creating this t-shirt? And what are you hoping to see with it going forward?
Yeah, I like this question. I was brainstorming at the time. I was honestly brainstorming a merchandise idea. I have felt like I had built a good enough platform that if I put out a really cool piece of merch that I think people would have gravitated towards it. It took me a little bit of time to figure out what that was. I was originally thinking something around women in sports. But I do know a lot. I have a lot of friends in the industry that already create and sell things like that. So I didn't, and I felt like that market is a little bit diluted currently because there's a lot of different offerings available. And I also wanted something that everybody could rally behind. I mean, anybody can be an ally, but like a shirt that says, I don't know, a proud woman in sports, pretty much you could assume probably only women are going to buy that. So I was really trying to think like, what is something that really any person, the whole world could get behind. And the design that we have just came to my mind. There's no like really cool story. It just kind of came to my mind. I was trying to think of something that included all or most, because there are groups missing. I can't put everything on a shirt as much as I wish I could, but that included the vast underrepresented and marginalized communities. So it came to mind. I didn't expect for it to become anything big. I only wanted it to go on for a couple of weeks. But my merch vendor in LA, he always makes jokes about how my project would make a very incredible case study in social media marketing, because I didn't really put any marketing dollars behind it. I mean, the only money I really spent was I sent out a few influencer shirts. But other than that, all of the success has come from just it going viral and, you know, people getting their shirt, posting it, their friends seeing, and that big snowball effect that we all know from social media. So I would have never imagined this. I didn't expect it at all, because I also knew I wasn't going in putting paid money behind posts or really spending many advertising dollars on it. But it's taken off into a way that I would have never imagined. And so now at this point, with it really gaining more visibility and recognition, I would hope that the message itself actually starts to resonate and actually starts to make changes in the industry, as we've all seen in the last few days. And honestly, all of these stories that we're hearing about people's voices being suppressed, for the lack of the better term, isn't anything new. So I would just hope that it starts to become actually change in the industry and people start to take it seriously. And it's pretty exciting because I'm seeing some of it. You know, I have friends at teams that have reached out and been like, hey, you know, my boss, people at the company, they see what you're doing, and we want to make sure that we're more intentional and proactive about our hiring practices. Like, can you put out a signal boost about a job, or can you recommend names that you can think of for this role? Because we want to make sure we're doing a better job at being both diverse and inclusive. So that's pretty exciting. I didn't really expect to be this like conduit, but to see that it's taken on more than just people buying merch and now people trying to affect change is really exciting. And that's what I hope to see from it.
No, it definitely is, because I think I was scrolling on Twitter one day and I saw someone with the shirt. I was like, oh, that looks kind of cool. And I was just thinking it was a shirt that just somebody just created, like out of nothing. And I kept seeing it more and more over the course of time. And of course, you know, I followed you follow me back. And I was like, oh, she created the shirt. Would have never made it. But I mean, the shirt is definitely like, it doesn't have like, it's not like a graphic t-shirt or anything like that, but it gets the message across about what it is and what a lot of us have saying in, you know, Black soccer media or, you know, Latin soccer media about like, we want our voices to be heard more. Not just only in months where, you know, it's Black History Month or Latin History Month or, you know, Asian Pacific Islander Month, whatever. But we want our voices to be heard every single month, every single day, and we want them to be valued just as much as our counterparts. And what you're doing is pretty much that. And I applaud you for it.
Thank you. That means a lot. Yeah, I mean, that's what I want to do personally and professionally, is make sure that any platform that I've been able to make and build that I can do something meaningful with it. I mean, any person can be like, have tons of followers and be verified and have a platform. But I think where a legacy can be made and where people can be impactful is what you actually do with that. And so I've always been about giving back to the community or trying to do something good. I also like to stay busy. I did a similar-ish project last year, especially around a lot of the social justice movements, but I always just try and use my platform for something good. And so that's what I wanted to do with this project. So yeah, it's exciting to see that people are definitely gravitating towards it, resonating with it. And that's even at work, that's what I want to do is I want to make sure that we're giving every voice, especially the very marginalized voices, an opportunity to be heard.
Yeah, most definitely. So we're going to put a bookmark in this conversation real quick. It's a great conversation. We're going to come back to it. But I want to ask you about a little bit more about your career because, you know, you are a guest on the show. So I had to do my research. I had to go look at the LinkedIn page. And I came across that you worked with the Golden State Warriors, 2K Sports, The Athletic. So first of all, I want to start off at 2K, an industry that is, you know, around video games, things like that. Very male-driven, I'm assuming. How was that experience for you, talking about everything that you were talking about being more inclusive, things like that? How was that experience for you, and were there any obstacles or hurdles that you went through that, you know, helped you become the person that you are now?
Yeah, it was a good experience for me. So it was my first, when I went to 2K, it was after I left the Warriors. And prior to that, I had always worked on the team side of sports. So I was at the Warriors, Oregon Ducks, and the Timbers. So I always worked on the team side and I was ready to try something a little bit different. And 2K, I think, was a good, in hindsight, pivot point for me because I got to still stay adjacent to sports and entertainment and then get a lot of media and tech experience. I got to do a lot of really cool things as far as partners. I was on the partnerships and licensing team. So I got to do pretty much any partner you've ever seen in NBA 2K or in any 2K games. I was helping manage those relationships. And then I also was helping with music licensing, which at the time was really cool because for NBA 2K20, which is the game I worked on, Travis Scott was the executive producer of the soundtrack. So getting to help with the music licensing for that was very exciting, and helping curate the list and license those tracks was very invaluable experience. Because one thing I learned during that time is that music licensing is an extremely archaic career or role that not many people know how to do. So getting that experience was pretty cool. But to your point, yeah, I mean, video game industry is definitely still very male dominated. There were certainly struggles, but I think this can be said to any industry as far as being one of the only women in the room and trying to make sure, actually trying to find the comfort to speak up. I don't think that's to say they wouldn't have heard me. I think I just, where I was personally at the time, was afraid to speak up and afraid to use my voice. And so one thing I've learned coming out of that was to be afraid. You know, worst thing that happens, which unfortunately happens too much, worst thing that happens is your voice is not heard. But it's better to try. It was a good experience for me. And ultimately, the reason why I left is because I'm not a video gamer. I admire them. I played them all the time with my brother growing up, but I'm just not good at video games. And so it was hard for me to get passionate about the product when I'm not really a consumer myself. So that's ultimately why I left and went to The Athletic and got back to sports. But it was a huge growing experience for me, for sure.
No, I imagine that experience had to be super dope of working with like Travis Scott and like other NBA athletes and be like, so what kind of music you want on the game? Like, was it like that? Mm-hmm. Or was it like, you're literally sitting there with Travis Scott, like, you want this file or do you want this file? Like I can only imagine.
Yeah. So it was more a little bit of like, a couple people internally curated playlists that they felt like as NBA 2K gamers and as people that understand the music industry and that understand these athletes, like they knew what people wanted to hear. So it was more so curating the lists, getting it approved. And then from there, we were working more with music managers and label companies to get the song actually licensed and then through the negotiation process. So a lot of the artists were probably 1 to 2 degrees away. So it was definitely more of the like granular process. I wasn't as involved in the curation process. But yeah, it was definitely a collaborative approach of like, what's cool? What are people going to want to hear?
So you also said that you spent time with the Golden State Warriors, I think for almost 4 years, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So how was that whole experience? I imagine like you're in the era of Golden State Warriors. My dog was in the game. I've seen the team win titles and what was your role with the Golden State Warriors? And I want to hear everything about this experience because I imagine it had to be dope being around Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, and Kevin Durant.
Yeah, so I was there 2014 to 2018, so it was very special. I mean, it was just a very special time. Again, when I took the job, I went in with like no expectations as far as like thinking I was going to go to 4 finals starting at the age of 22 or win my first championship at 22. But it was a really incredible time. That era, a lot of our friends, like people that worked at the company, we were extremely close. And anyone that works in sports know you spend a lot of hours at work. You spend a lot of hours together. And so it was definitely a rare culture of people that all got along because for the amount of hours we spent together on our free nights, we would hang out together. And that certainly says a lot. We obviously really liked each other. So having that helped a lot. It added us an extra layer of specialness. But my role there was I was an account manager for season ticket holders. So I was definitely in a relationship management role. There was a little bit of sales involved. And ultimately, the intent of my role was to build these relationships, really help them feel connected to the team. And then the sales part came in where, you know, at the end of every year, season ticket renewals come around and you want to make sure that you have a strong enough relationship and you know the person well enough where you can ask for their credit card number and for them to spend the money that it costs. And, you know, at the time with the Warriors, those season tickets, I mean, even to this day, those season tickets aren't cheap by any means. So to ask people to spend that much money, it definitely required a level of comfort. And a lot of it took knowing them and knowing them well enough to appeal. What's up?
Were there any awkward phone calls in that? I imagine it had to be some.
Oh, yes.
Any awkward phone calls you mind sharing?
I mean, a lot of it just came around the cost because I was very good at being able to justify the value, why you should have season tickets over buying just one-off single game. Because really, when you look at the value, you save money by buying season tickets. There were awkward phone calls, though, because it was a lot of money. And so I was having conversations with people that were literally telling me, it's either we go on a 4-week family vacation this summer or we buy the season tickets. And like, we have a decision to make. Or like, I send my daughter to college for a year or we renew our season tickets. And you can't really argue with that. And so that's where it got uncomfortable. And especially it's like, I know you guys seem pretty well off. You can probably afford it. But when I tell you these prices, like some people's salaries. So it's like uncomfortable combos for sure. Cause I could do the sales gig all day, but then it comes to the human aspect of like, I get it. This is a shit ton of money.
You haven't even dropped like a price yet. And I'm over here thinking like a 4-week family vacation. Like what? Like I'm still in the range of like, I'm comfortable now with just getting to a week now. So I can only imagine.
It was a, There are a lot, I'd say that.
So you also,
I wouldn't afford it, let's say that.
I can imagine.
None of us combined probably would.
Oh, so you also mentioned about how you were in this era about when they were winning rings. So I'm assuming everyone on the staff gets a ring. Were you ever like flaunting a ring around, like, you know, going around your friends and be like, hey, look at this. You got one of these? No.
These boxes right here, these black boxes are actually the boxes that the rings came in.
Just collecting dust.
Just collecting dust. No, the rings are in a safe, but those are just the boxes. They're pretty cool. I thought it would be cool to display. I was very nervous to wear them just because like high value, of course. Yeah. I would wear them to games. I would wear mine to game because a lot of times my clients wanted to see them. So I would wear them because they would want to look at it. And yeah, it was a nice little flex. But outside of games, I wouldn't really wear it anywhere else. It's too chunky and too expensive for me to potentially lose or, like, I don't know, someone jump me for it.
So I have to ask this question. So we're at 2K. You're not a big video gamer. You're at the Portland Timbers. You weren't really into soccer. Were you a basketball person at this time at Golden State? Or were you just like, it's kind of cool to flex a basketball championship ring around?
I've seen a theme here. I did like basketball. I was actually a Blazers fan before I went to the Warriors. Wow. Yeah, I was a big so the summer I interned for the Timbers was the summer that I think it was the same summer Dame was drafted. Or maybe the next year, but I went to a lot of games, and again, my brother's there, my family's there, so I'd always go to Blazers games with my friends. And so I was a basketball fan beforehand. I was a Blazers fan. I just wasn't a Warriors fan. And of course, over the 4 years, that changed. So I think it was like less of a learning curve than probably going to a video game company or being completely ignorant to soccer and interning for the Timbers for summer.
I mean, look, winning what, three championships winning a championship every year you work there would kind of make you a fan of any team. Let's be
exactly. Real about that. It could have been worse.
Yeah, exactly. You could have been drafted first overall every single year and just be like, I don't know if this is going to do it for me.
Right.
So, like you said, you were working at The Athletic as well. And The Athletic has really boomed into this company that has given a lot of people, a lot of writers, an opportunity to really feel value in their work. And that's something I imagine that you're really passionate about. How was your experience at The Athletic from, you know, being there for 2 years, but also being the social media manager and the community marketing manager? What were your role like at those two chairs for the company?
Yeah. So when I left 2K and I joined The Athletic, I first joined as community marketing manager. And so, like, in a very high level nutshell, I basically worked to make sure that subscribers felt the value in their subscription. I mean, like with anything, and this is where a lot of the skills from the Warriors came in, where what is the value in spending money every year? Sure, the cost compared to season tickets is much lower, but especially when there's lots of other journalism and free content available, helping subscribers understand, like, this is why you should pay X dollars a year to subscribe for our journalism. So a lot of those were like unique features behind the paywall on the app that only subscribers could get. So that's what I spent about my first year doing, was developing those features with our product managers, with our engineers, and coming up with really cool things that only subscribers could get that they would care about and help them see the value of. Yes, I could read free content on other sites, but not only do I get quality journalism at The Athletic, but I also get all these other features that I can't find anywhere else. So that's what I spent about a year doing. It was a really cool experience, and it was a huge learning curve because it was a lot of marketing and a lot of, like, very analytical thinking that I wasn't doing prior. I have a degree in marketing, but it was the first time I really applied some of those marketing lessons into my career. And then last summer, there was a need to build out the social team, and I had a really strong interest in trying to do social media full time. I had helped fill in throughout, like, that first year there when the social team needed help. So it was a very easy transition, and I made the transition over. I asked to move teams and to be a social manager full time. So I did that from last summer until when I came to Blue Wire just this February. And that was really cool. I really like that. It's definitely where I think I not only developed, but helped pique my interest in just very in-depth storytelling, specifically for the athletes and the stories that just aren't being told. Working with the journalists were awesome. I think if anyone were to ask me what my favorite part was, it's working with the journalists. All the writers at The Athletic and podcasters are just really cool people. And that was probably the hardest part when I left, was not only the friends I had on the HQ side, which are now still some of my best friends. We're in a group text that gets blown up all day, every day. But also, like, the journalists, I was going to miss them a lot, but we're all Twitter friends anyways, so I still talk shit and interact with them daily. But that definitely was the best part of the whole experience, was getting to work with the writers.
So I gotta ask, who has the best memes in the group chat?
In my friend group chat? Me.
Yes. It's always that one friend that has like the best memes out of everyone. It'd be like meme that no one else can find. He's just like, how did you find this?
Me. My Twitter bookmarks are pretty extensive. You never know, just in case. I just bookmark things just in case. You never know when you need it.
You gotta look, you gotta keep it ready. You gotta be ready for any time. You gotta be ready. So you know, now you're in a position at Bluecast, and you're also formerly with The Athletic, working with journalists and working with podcasters. How are the voices of minorities? And I hate saying the word minorities, but I can't think of another word on the spot. How was it trying to promote their voices and have their voices feel like they're being equally shared and valued as their counterparts?
Yeah, so I definitely tried to put a very intentional lens on that when I was at The Athletic. Had developed like a spotlight series that we did weekly or bi-weekly on social to really showcase the young and diverse talent at the company, specifically at The Athletic, because I think when people think of or initially join the company as a subscriber, they're probably drawn to the very big names that they know. And those are the names that will, you know, bring in subscribers and that will attract attention. But there's so much good young talent at the company. So I tried to make it very intentional that we promoted them because, you know, there's some writers and podcasters at The Athletic with hundreds of thousands of followers and their work will always get eyes on it. But then there are some recent graduates that are just as talented, but they don't have as large of a following. So I wanted to make sure that they also got as much love on social media and promotion as their counterparts. So I tried to put an intentional lens on that and was in the middle of that project when I left. But yeah, at Blue Wire, I mean, it's honestly one of our core values and one of our big mission statements is to make sure that whether it's on our network of podcasts or any studio originals, and even just the things we do from a marketing perspective or a company perspective, that we're making sure that underrepresented voices and any marginalized community have a voice, have a place to tell stories, have a place to create content. And so it's something that we really strive to do day in and day out.
So real quick for the listeners out there that might not be familiar, what exactly is Bluecast?
So the best way to describe it is the company's been around for about 2 years or 2.5 years, which is pretty incredible. Kevin, our founder, started it on his own. He also was in Bay Area sports media. And so he started Blue Wire on his own to create a place because he was frustrated with the types of stories being told. So the way I describe it, and our head of marketing used this analogy, which I find very helpful, it's very similar to like Hulu or Netflix, where we have our network of licensed content. So we have over like 150, probably more podcasts that we've signed to the network and we've licensed that content. And then we also have our studio side, our originals, which is for us currently, we have 2 seasons of American Prodigy. We have season 1 with Freddie Du and season 2 with Ken Griffey Jr. And then we have Spinsters, our basketball podcast with Haley O'Shaughnessy and Jordan Liggins, who came from The Ringer, and they have a huge following. It's a very successful show for us. So I look at it as 2 parts to the business, our network and our studio. And it's just, again, a place for, we see it as like the home for the next generation of sports fans, the home for sports fans that just aren't getting the type of content served to them that other outlets just have failed to serve. So yes, we're Blue Wire Pods, but we're sort of dropping the podcast because we want to get into video and we wanted to get into other forms of media. We have a studio being built at the Wynn Resort in Vegas. So we'll start doing live events. So we'll definitely be much more than just a podcast company. And it's growing every day. It's actually quite incredible. Throughout my interview process, from the first interview till the time I was offered, the whole Wynn deal just happened to come about. So things are popping up every day. It's very exciting.
I imagine it has to be exciting to see a company kind of blossom and groom to this thing that it is possibly has the potential to be. So I want to go back to what we were talking about earlier about the t-shirts you designed, but more in the contrast of the incident that happened with ESPN and Rachel Nichols and all that. And I am a male. I can't see it through the same lens as a woman. So like, I asked my wife, like, am I reading this wrong? Like what? I had to try to ask her to try to explain it to me. Basically, she described it to me was, it's something that daily happens in offices about how Black people or people of color, minorities, we only, instead of having like a roof that we complete or a plateau, it's kind of like we get the bare minimum. We get the, you can only get to this place without affecting me. I'll promote you as much as you can unless you don't affect me. Mm-hmm. So, and I want to get your opinion on it because once again, like you have this t-shirt, you have this message, this persona about you. So what was that whole situation about and why was it so detrimental to hear Rachel Nichols speak about Maria Taylor in that matter and minorities?
Yeah, so I woke up to it. This was just Sunday on the 4th?
Yeah.
So I like slept in that day, woke up to it. Truly, I like opened Twitter and saw and was like, it was one of those like, all right, back to bed. Like, I cannot believe what I'm reading. Someone actually had, in my mentions, somebody had tagged me and was like, I think you need to send Rachel Nichols a shirt. So I was like, oh God, what happened? So I looked it up and caught up on everything. And yeah, I was definitely, it was disheartening. And I think there's multiple things that can be true here and everyone has their perspective on it. But I think more than one thing can be true in that it is clear ESPN and honestly a lot of other sports media companies, if we're looking at it sports specifically, has a culture problem where a culture and a diversity problem. At the same time, what she said was still, it's just inexcusable. It's just absolutely inexcusable and disrespectful to Maria Taylor. The way I perceived it and why it was so frustrating, and this can be said for both the company and herself, is it's not a competition. And I think that is my biggest thing when it comes to specifically women in sports, is it is not a competition. However, thus far and to this day, a lot of companies have created a culture where women feel like they have to compete with one another, and therefore we can be perceived as threats. And it's quite clear that that's how she felt in this instant, where it wasn't so much like, this is so awesome that a colleague and a very talented woman is getting an opportunity. It was, she's getting an opportunity at my expense. And that's why I think it's a twofold problem, is not only the thoughts that she said in private, but that ESPN had created such a culture. And a lot of companies have created such a culture where it's a competition, where they feel like there's only so many spots available. I find a lot of comfort in seeing just on Twitter and the community of women in sports that I know, where we're all very, for the most part, inclusive of one another. So we know that it's not a competition, but there's still a very archaic way of thinking when it comes to both men and quite frankly, white men that have created this mindset that there's only so many spots. And that's the biggest thing is like, there aren't limited seats at the table. There should always be seats at the table. And so she shouldn't feel like Maria is taking her seat. You can both sit at the table. And that's why I had such a problem with it, is it's not a competition. And like, that's my thing at the end of the day. And I try and tell other women in the industry, or especially younger women, when they ask for mentorship and advice, is it's not a competition. There should be multiple seats at the table. And that's on us as people, hiring managers and people that can affect decision making in companies, to make sure that we aren't just creating like a competitive environment, because that's where it gets very, it's where it gets detrimental.
Yeah, it does very much so. And it's very sad to see that from someone that's, you know, Rachel Nichols, someone that's looked up to by, you know, mm-hmm. a lot of younger women and whatnot. And it's sad to see that, you know, what she said had an effect not only on Maria Taylor, but the other young lady in the situation. So I want to ask you this question, and I'm pretty sure you can answer it to the best of your ability. For those companies or for those people in the space of Twitter or just their general workplace that want to be an ally but also amplify women's voices, not make it a competitive market, because you're totally right. Like, it's not a competition. There's no, like, physical table that said that only six people can sit here.
Yeah.
What steps and what tools would you give to someone that's looking to be a proactive ally in that space?
Honestly, what I always just tell people is like, what I like to do and something that I actively like to do is, like, when I'm asked, like, in these scenarios where I told you that people were reaching out, like, hey, you know, your shirt really resonated with our company. We want to make sure we're doing better. Can you recommend names? Like, I always want to make sure I'm recommending names. And quite honestly, I want to make sure I'm always recommending specifically Black women. There are not enough Black women in the industry. That, like, the best way to be an ally is, like, there's very free ways you can do these things. You can follow people's work. You can retweet. You can support, you know, when it comes to podcasts. Subscribes and saving and downloading goes a long ways. You know, reading people's articles goes a long ways. But yeah, like, in positions of power, where if you can influence or affect a hiring manager's decision, if you can recommend names, that's what I like to do, because no one else is going to do it for them. I mean, they can recommend themselves, but when you're in the position of power and that you actually can influence maybe a hiring process, it's important to uplift one another's names. Like, you can say that you're an ally, but to actually do things, those are very easy, tangible ways that you can be a good ally.
Yeah, very much so. And I'm so glad you brought up this point, because I didn't think about it until you said it, about there's not enough Black women's voices in soccer. I mean, or in sports in general. I'm just using soccer as an example, because it's, you know, sport that I look at the most. But what do you believe are the reasons behind that? Why is it seem to be this reluctance to give not only Black voices, but Black women the platform to write these amazing articles or to be these fantastic podcasters that we know they can be? Why does it seem to be that reluctancy in the industry?
Honestly, I think it just comes back again to the just the unfortunate, like, archaic mindset of there's only so many spots and there's only so many people. And I think a lot of companies, if I'm just being very frank, think if they hire a woman that they're, like, checking the right box, they did their due diligence. Like, hiring a white woman is not it's not diversity. Like, I'll be quite frank, like, great. However,
I am, like, so glad you said that. I mean, that, look, that, as a male, I can't speak about the female aspect, but I'm so glad you said that, because I'm just so glad you said that.
Yeah, I mean, like, that's not to discredit that there aren't just talented women, but, like, there, you can look further. Hiring a white woman is not, like, a pass to check off the diversity box. There are so many talented Black women in the space, and I honestly think it still comes down to just people thinking it's competition, people thinking there's not enough space. And over time, systemically, those voices just got suppressed and marginalized. And so they had to fight their own way. I follow so many incredible Black women in the space that had to create their own companies and do their own thing because the major outlets weren't giving them a chance. And now people are starting to see their work and starting to pick it up. And it's kind of like, oh, now you want me. You didn't want me however many years ago. And I still think, yeah, it just comes down to leadership and people at the top and not creating enough spaces and honestly making a safe space for people to feel like they even want to join. Because I hear stories, and, like, it's those person's stories to tell, but I hear stories from other companies and outlets all throughout the space where maybe they got a chance, but they weren't treated correctly. So they left. It wasn't good for their mental health.
Yeah. And that's something that, you know, I want to say maybe the past 3 or so years has been a really positive thing about, like, people really checking their mental health when it comes to, you know, sharing these sports stories or, you know, being in these workplaces. Like, you know, take care of yourself above anything else. But Megan, this has been an amazing conversation. Real quick, before we wrap up, and once again, I've already thanked you a bunch of times before we started recording, but I just want to thank you again for taking the time out of your day for coming on the pod.
Happy to be here.
Where can everyone reach out to you at, and if they possibly want to buy a shirt? We'll put a link in our description down below so people can click on it and support you as well. But where can people reach out to you at, and if they want an advice?
Sure. Yes. No, I'm actually really glad you said that. So the shirts are available at morediversevoicesinsports.com. And And follow me on Twitter and Instagram. It's both at Meg Reyes _. I'm a very open book, like very happy to be on the podcast, talk about my experiences. And for anyone that wants to talk, get advice, or just, you know, talk about being in the industry at all or whatever it may be, DM me. Like, I try my very best to check my messages. So yeah, follow me, and also follow our work. Follow Blue Wire Pods, because we have a lot of really cool stuff coming out.
Well, that is so awesome to do. Well, as always, listeners, you can follow the podcast on Twitter at CIKIFC. I got to remember this because we just got a brand new Twitter and I'm trying to remember it. So you can follow us on Twitter there. As always, take the time out of your day. Take 5 seconds right now. Just like, share, and subscribe our podcast. We're trying to grow this thing out. We're almost at the end of season 2. We've got one more episode left. So be on the lookout for that before we wrap up season 2 and go start off with season 3. But as always, Megan, thank you once again. I think this is the 5th time I thank you now.
All good. Thank you for having me.
Not a problem. And as always, listeners, we'll catch you guys later.